Up next and back with us on Coast to Coast, Jeffrey Mishlove, his incredible story of the PK man, parapsychology. This is a true story of mind over matter. So much to talk with Jeffrey about, and we'll get right to it when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome to another edition of Coast to Coast, the second half, as we talk with Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove about his incredible work in the field of parapsychology. Now, he, of course, earned his doctoral degree from the University of California, Berkeley. He teaches parapsychology. He, of course, is an expert in this field. His book is called The PK Man, which was a true story of mind over matter. We've talked with him about that over the years. We'll do a little review. But it's an amazing story of Ted Owens. But welcome back to Coast, Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove. Jeff, welcome back. Hi. Jeffrey.
Hi, George. Good to be with you.
You're looking forward to this. My gosh, there's nothing better in the wee hours than to chat with you about the paranormal and parapsychology.
Well, thank you.
What have you been working on?
Well, I launched a video channel on YouTube. I've, in the last 8 months, I've put 90 videos up lately. So that's been real exciting for me.
That's Thinking Aloud, right?
It's called New Thinking Aloud. The old program ran from 1986 through 2002, and I took a breather for over a decade and started it up again in the middle of last year, and it's been exciting.
Good for you. Good for you. YouTube has just done a remarkable job giving people access to television and television programs and then letting the viewers find that and just really gaining some knowledge. I think they do a great job.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. So let's do a little review of the PK Man. It's a story about Ted Owens, a real person, right?
Ted Owens died in 1987, and I worked with him starting in 1976, and he, indeed, he was a real person, born in 1920 in Indiana, and he demonstrated over and over again remarkable psychokinetic abilities. He spent his whole life trying to convince scientists and producing demonstrations for the benefit of scientists. He wanted so much to work with them, and I tried very hard during my years with him to interest the scientific community, but people were either afraid or in total disbelief. He specialized in what he called large-scale PK effects. He wanted to call it the Owens effect, and back in those days, Uri Geller was very popular, mm-hmm. bending forks, and Ted Owens said, you know, it's just as easy to control a hurricane as it is to bend a fork. And so he worked with weather. He could produce UFO sightings, hurricanes, tornadoes, volcanoes, large-scale power blackouts, things like that. And unfortunately, sometimes people were hurt.
Well, and I was going to say, Jeffrey, did he not say that he got these abilities from space-faring beings?
That was what he claimed, indeed. He called them space intelligences. He said they were other dimensional beings, and that sometimes he visualized them as looking like giant insects, like praying mantises.
Yep.
He called them tweeter and twitter, and said they, if you were to hear them, they'd make high-pitched squeaky sounds.
Now, somewhere along the line, people truly didn't accept what he said. They ignored it. They challenged him. They put him down. He had a temper, didn't he?
Well, he often felt that people like that needed to be taught a lesson. And, you know, people were very rude to him. On one occasion, he came to visit San Francisco, where I lived at the time, and he walked into the offices of the San Francisco Chronicle, the big newspaper, and there was a drought going on that summer, and he said, I'm here to end the drought, the PK Man, and the guards at the lobby just booted him right out the door, and unfortunately, he felt he needed to teach the people a lesson, and his signature was lightning. He could point his finger and cause lightning to strike, and he said he was going to show the people of California what he could do, and within a few weeks there were thousands of forest fires started by lightning.
And is this true, Jeffrey, that in order to try to convince people of these powers in a very bizarre way, he produced earthquakes, created civil unrest, had these UFO sightings, these weather events. He even threatened to down an aircraft just to let people know he was telling it the way it is. Did he do all those things?
Well, you know, George, I don't think it's quite as dramatic as you're saying. I don't recall civil unrest, and I don't recall him threatening to down an airplane. But sometimes these things would happen by accident. For example, years ago, he was doing a demonstration, and he had a friend who led him into a radar installation in Chesapeake Bay, and he was causing unusual blips to appear on the radar over the Chesapeake Bay, and then subsequently there were a number of military plane crashes right into the bay. Sometimes parapsychologists talk about a linger effect with psychokinetic activity, that things linger. Well, a famous science writer, Otto Binder, wrote a story about these plane crashes, and Ted Owens, at the time when the article appeared, was on an airplane himself flying back to New York from Egypt, where he had been on an expedition, and he had the magazine, and he was sitting up in first class bragging to all the stewardesses about how he had done this radar demonstration and planes crashed as a result of it.
Oh,
and his plane was flying in to JFK Airport at the time. I think it was called Idlewild back then. The plane right in front of his was struck by lightning and crashed, one of the largest crashes in U.S. history. And there were too many synchronicities like this that surrounded him and his activities. And often they occurred when he's concentrating on a picture, because he believed that his space intelligences taught him to send messages to them by concentrating on visual images like that. I'll give you another example. He happened to be living in Vancouver, Washington, right alongside Mount St. Helens, and he was doing something similar with his children in a park, concentrating on a mental image like that, pointing at the mountain when it actually exploded. Now, those were not deliberate. None of that was deliberate on his part. And it might just be pure coincidence, but there he was.
Did you like him?
He was a difficult person to get along with. I did my best to develop a good working relationship with him, and we, I guess you could say, we were colleagues for over a decade. But he, you know, one of my friends to whom I introduced him described him as being like a grizzly bear with a burr up his butt.
And
so he was often hard to get along with.
How did he die, Jeffrey? Just old age? What happened?
It was 1987. He was living in upstate New York at the time on a farmhouse, and I believe his death was sclerosis of the liver. He was a very heavy drinker, and he sometimes did his best PK work after having downed quite a few glasses of scotch or whiskey.
Hmm. Okay, now you've been developing your own theories of late about some kind of, what, synchronistic resonance? Tell me about this.
Well, yes, back in, it's been about 2007 or so, I published the theory, co-authored with a psychologist from Georgia named Brendan Engen, on archetypal synchronistic resonance. And it was our way of coming to terms with the fact that we had been told by a psychic that we had known each other in a past lifetime. And Brendan asked me, he thought I was, he was told that I was the ancient Roman philosopher Seneca in a past life, and that he had been a close colleague and student of Seneca's. And there are many reasons that I felt I had a very strong psychic connection with Seneca. In fact, when Brendan Engen reached out to me, at that very moment, I was on my way to the city of Cordoba in Spain, which was the birthplace of Seneca. So there were these uncanny synchronistic connections, but at the same time, it's hard for me to accept that I really was this very illustrious person from world history. So I began to ask myself, what is the nature of this connection? And I think many people have connections like this with historical figures. And so we called it archetypal synchronistic resonance, and it's sort of based on Jungian psychology, and it's a way of looking at these connections without having to necessarily buy into the ego image that I was this great famous person.
When you started doing this, and you were a student of pure psychology back in the 70s, right?
Yes, I was. I got my doctoral degree in 1980 in parapsychology from Berkeley. And incidentally, George, it's the only doctoral diploma that actually says parapsychology that was ever issued by any accredited university anywhere in the world.
Oh, my gosh. My gosh. When you got into this, what was your favorite subjects? What did you really enjoy?
Oh, what an interesting question. I was very interested in mysticism and the occult. I read everything I could about Aleister Crowley, and I was fascinated by the work of Rudolf Steiner, the founder of anthroposophy. And I began actually as an undergraduate student in psychology at the University of Wisconsin, and I was a skeptic. And I wrote an undergraduate senior honors thesis on the psychology of religious mysticism. My intention was to try and discover, you know, what sort of psychopathology caused people to report psychic and mystical experiences. And by the time I finished that paper, I was convinced that actually these experiences were very real and very important to people.
Indeed they were, and I'm glad you went into this field, because there aren't many people like you, Jeffrey, that truly understand it and have devoted their entire careers to this.
I wish there were more. That's one of the reasons I launched the new Thinking Aloud TV series, is to help create a body of information for young students who may come along and want to pursue a career in this field.
That's great. That's great. I hope you get zillions of people watching that after tonight, too.
Well, thank you, George. There's probably nobody who could assist me more than you.
When you first learned of Ted Owens and started working with him, Jeffrey, what did you think of him in the beginning?
He was this larger-than-life person. If you had met a folk hero like Paul Bunyan or Pecos Bill, it seemed like that. When I first met him, I was in London at a parapsychology conference, and he was invited to be a speaker there at the University of London, because it had come to the attention of people that he had ended a drought in California, and they were having a drought in London at the time. And he did. When he arrived in London, that drought ended, much to the amazement of everybody. And then he walked onto this stage carrying a toy wagon, a child's toy wagon, loaded high with papers that he said were all the documents of his demonstrations. And it was the most, you know, bizarre thing you could imagine, and people were totally mystified by him, and they thought, you know, he was a braggart. And I got up, because I knew what had happened in California, because he had done a demonstration for my friends Russell Targ and Hal Puthoff at SRI International.
Yep, great people.
Researchers who were studying Uri Geller at the time. And I told the audience, you know, I can testify to at least one of the things that he's claiming is actually real. And so I befriended him at a time when people were very hostile to him, and I think that forged a bond between us. He had a deep, booming voice, and a very large man with a big white beard at the time. He almost looked like Santa Claus.
Did he have a family?
Yes. As a matter of fact, his family members are still alive, living here in the United States. His wife, Martha, died just a few months ago.
What did they think of him, Jeffrey?
Well, you know, I'm sure it was not easy growing up with him as a father. He wasn't necessarily the best provider, but he tried to teach his children how to do these things. In fact, he taught many people, and many people have testified that after taking his training program, remarkable things have occurred.
Now, when people hear the word parapsychology, what do they think, and what does it mean to you?
It means many different things to different people. I had my Aunt Jeanette once, when I told her that I was studying parapsychology, she said to me, "Oh, that's nice, dear. I guess that means you'll be assisting psychologists." But and other people think right away of Edgar Casey. But yep. Actually, I think the important thing to let your listeners know about parapsychology is that it's a scientific study based on the empirical methods of science, and the Parapsychological Association, of which I'm happy to be a member, is affiliated with the American Association for the Advancement of Science. And the field of parapsychology is an outgrowth of an earlier discipline called psychical research, which goes back to the 1850s and involves some of the most brilliant minds of the 19th and 20th centuries, Nobel laureates who began studying mediumship and seances and made many, many contributions to our knowledge of the unconscious mind based on that. So it has a very long and illustrious career, in my opinion, as a scientific discipline.
Jeffrey, how much of parapsychology is based on studying the physical mind, the brain, or are we dealing with something totally outside the physical realm?
Well, in order to do science, you have to have something physical to go on. Like when Ted Owens points his finger and lightning strikes, that's quite physical.
That's physical.
There are many, many examples of that. So things that are purely mental, for example, people who see spirits is purely mental, unless many people can see them all together or they can be photographed, then it's physical. So I guess the answer to your question, George, is that there's a spectrum ranging from the very ethereal, elusive kinds of phenomenon to things that are hardcore physical, like tables levitating.
Gosh, it's just an amazing field. When we come back, I want to talk with you about your thoughts of Uri Geller. He's a friend of ours, Jeffrey. He's been on the program before, but I want to get your take on his ability. Some people say he's just a great magician, but you know, we'll find out through the eyes of a parapsychologist what indeed he might be. And again, the new YouTube, the updated program is called New Thinking Aloud television series, which you can find on YouTube. You just search for that, New Thinking Aloud. And I got to believe, Jeffrey, it's getting how many hits now?
Oh, we're up to about 185,000.
Beautiful. Good for you. That's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, stick with us. We're going to come back and talk more. In our final hour, we're going to open up the phone lines with Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove, but not right now. We're going to do that a little bit later on. We're with Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove. We're talking about the world of the paranormal, the parapsychology. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove. Jeffrey, Uri Geller, you've looked at him. You've evaluated some of his work. He's been on our program before. Is he truly psychically inclined, or is he one heck of a magician?
Yeah, I've known Uri since 1972, George. In fact, I sponsored his first major public appearance in the United States, which was at the University of California at Berkeley. I was a graduate student at the time, and I've been watching his career ever since. I've been in scientific laboratories with him on several occasions, and I can attest that he has some authentic abilities. I know the skeptics would like you to believe that he's nothing but a charlatan, and he is a performer, so he probably does know all sorts of stage magic, but he's the real item, as far as I'm concerned. At least there are many examples of things he's done in the laboratory that cannot be explained away as simple tricks.
He got raked over the coals when he was unable to perform on the Johnny Carson show. It just didn't click for him or work. Did he ever explain to you what happened?
No, but you know, the fact of the matter is, with any authentic psychic, they cannot perform on demand every single time.
No, they can't.
To me, the best way to think of it is like baseball players, like Babe Ruth, one of the greatest home run hitters of all time, struck out more often than he hit home runs, and psychics are more or less the same.
Well, and when you think of this, you know, you think of a baseball player as being great when they hit 300,
yeah.
But what you got to look at as well is they fail 70% of the time.
Now, when I worked with Ted Owens, for example, during the period I worked with him, I collected data on about 168 of his demonstrations, and I would say approximately two-thirds of them worked the way he intended them to, but one-third did not.
Tell me about the new Thinking Aloud television series on YouTube. Tell me the format and what you do.
They're half-hour interviews, and I'm trying to focus especially on senior people in the field of parapsychology looking back at their whole career. For example, next month I have Stanley Krippner, who is 85 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
One of the people who inspired me to go into parapsychology. He did the classic dream telepathy research back in the 1960s, and he's been active in the field ever since. And I hope to do 12 different half-hour interviews with him, looking back at his whole career. I've had a number of senior people come in like that, and more are scheduled. I think I've been very fortunate. People are willing to fly to Las Vegas, where my studio is, actually from all over the world to be interviewed. So
that's great.
Been a blessing for me.
Would you say that the field, Jeffrey, of parapsychology is growing? Is it stagnant? Where do you say that it stands?
It's growing, but it's growing very slowly. And, you know, when I first got into the field, George, back in the 1970s, it seemed as if it was going to be revolutionary, that everything would change. And it sort of, you know, looking back now, I can say, oh, the internet did change everything. Computers changed everything. But progress in parapsychology has been much, much slower. And William James, who was one of the great psychical researchers and the founder of American psychology, once said that we have to measure progress in this field not by the decade as in other disciplines, but by the century and half century. And I think the reason is because it reaches so deep into such profound questions about the nature of consciousness, the nature of time and space, that and we have very deeply entrenched social attitudes about it. So progress is just going to be very slow.
And in spite of all this, though, it is still running up against a lot of resistance, isn't it?
there is a lot of resistance, but at the same time, there have been some huge breakthroughs. There's been very successful work in the field of psychic archaeology. There's been really good research in the field of psychic healing. I think you have a television interview scheduled coming up in the future with my friend Marty Rosenblatt, who is...
Yep.
Done very good work on looking at precognition in the financial markets. So, in my mind, these practical applications are going to make the difference. People will argue right and left about whether it's real or it's not real and how can we explain it. But when you see that people are able to use it for practical purposes, which has been the case, I suppose, for thousands of years, but is now being recorded in a scientific fashion, I think that's going to turn things around. And we may see, let's say, in the next 50 years, a real explosion. That revolution that I expected in the 70s that hasn't occurred yet is still waiting to happen. And I hope it happens while I'm still alive, or if not, I hope I get reborn to see it in the future.
Now, tell me about the connection between parapsychology, Jeffrey, and ufology.
Well, you've got Uri Geller, whose psychokinetic abilities he attributed to UFOs, although he tried to downplay it.
He did not like talking about that.
He didn't like talking about it, but he never denied it. And Ted Owens, the same thing. I'm inclined to think that there is an incredible relationship. I don't think that UFOs are nuts and bolts spacecraft that come from other planets at the speed of light. I think that they have something to do with other dimensions, and other dimensions has something to do with altered states of consciousness. There's a relationship there that we have yet to really fully grasp.
It seems that if there's a UFO tie-in here, that the ETs give people this ability. Is that a pretty good guess?
That's precisely what Ted Owens said, that in fact they said they gave him these abilities just as they had done for Moses, is the way he put it. And his abilities, he said, were, you know, the largest example of that kind of power since the days of Moses. But he said their purpose was to basically conduct a sociological experiment and see how the human population would react to somebody with those abilities. So it's possible that, you know, they are manipulating us, they are experimenting with us, but, you know, for all I know, they is ourselves in the future, maybe coming back in time. I think we have to be very flexible in our thinking about these things.
Is the field getting any support from mainstream religion, or do they think this is the work of the devil?
Well, when you talk about mainstream religion, George, I suppose you have to divide it into the conservative, fundamentalist mainstream religions and the liberal mainstream religions.
Right.
You know, from a fundamentalist point of view, this is the work of the devil. And from the liberal point of view, they're more open-minded about what it might be. What are the possibilities? Perhaps we are going to encounter civilizations from far away.
Well, that's all possible. That is all possible. These abilities for people, do you ever come across evil people, Jeffrey? I mean, one could say Ted Owens was evil, but...
Yeah, one could say that he was evil, and certainly he did things that were harmful, but...
To prove a point.
It was to prove a point, and I think it was unwise of him to pursue that course. I argued with him about it quite a bit, but you know, that's who he was, and there are people like that who feel that, I suppose, like Donald Trump, if somebody attacks me, I'm going to hit him back. And he took that attitude. That's not necessarily evil, but sure, there are people who are far worse than that. And I think the thing that frightens people is that if once you begin to accept the existence of psychic abilities, particularly mind over matter or psychokinesis, how are you going to deal with the possibility that a person who has harmful intentions, maybe even an evil person, might have these abilities, like as in horror movies? And it's only a matter of 300-500 years when, you know, society was burning people at the stake out of fear that they were evil witches. So I don't know that we've digested the lesson from that yet.
What have we learned about parapsychology in terms of what it really is?
Well, we don't yet have a readily agreed upon theory about what it really is, but we do have an enormous body of empirical evidence, 150 years worth, to suggest that these phenomena, and I'm talking about a very wide range, a whole spectrum of phenomena, are real. And that they're related to the human mind. But to be quite honest with you, George, some of the brightest neuroscientists today still can't explain consciousness. And yet everybody experiences consciousness every waking moment of their lives. So we have a long way to go as a civilization in terms of understanding ourselves.
How many people do you think possess the abilities that Ted Owens possessed?
Well, Ted Owens was very rare. He would be like Babe Ruth.
Okay. He was the top of the line, I guess, in the field.
Although I suppose, to be fair, there might be, for all I know, 1,000 people in the world today who have abilities like that. I suspect that's probably true.
Sure. They just don't have the notoriety that he did.
That's right. But let's take the average person, members of your listening audience, are people who are interested in this field. And my best guess is that probably 70, 80, 90% or more of your listeners have had unusual paranormal experiences. So, you know, I think they're quite common. And it's very ironic to me that even though there's such popular interest and so many people have had these experiences, that the mainstream academic community has their head buried in the sand and tries to pretend that these things simply don't exist.
Well, we both know, Jeffrey, they do exist. How much so is up for debate, but there's something there, and there's something very, very real. Why do some people, ET contacts aside, seem to possess broader powers and abilities than other people?
Well, the same would be true of any human ability, mathematical talent or athletic talent or musical talent. There's, a bell curve. Some people have it extremely positive. Some people have almost none. And most people are somewhere in the middle.
Well, they truly are. Now, do you have to be spiritually inclined to have these abilities?
I don't think so. I don't think you have to be at all. But I will say this. I think that people who are on a spiritual path often exhibit these abilities, that these abilities are normal signs that you're on the path and that things are going well for you. And most spiritual teachers will say, don't get attached to these abilities. Don't try and show off because they are pitfalls on a spiritual path. You can develop a big ego when you have these abilities. And from my experience working with many psychic people, I think that's an issue they often have to contend with.
Does reincarnation play a role in any of this?
Well, there's an enormous body of research now on reincarnation. It was initiated at the University of Virginia by the late Professor Ian Stevenson, who collected over 2,000 cases of young children who were able to remember their past lives. And he focused on these cases because they seemed to be the most credible from a scientific point of view, since the young children often were able to describe in great detail information about other lives that they, because of their young age, had no way of knowing based on normal information, whereas if it were an adult, you never know if they can describe something accurately, if maybe they read about it or learned about it somehow.
Well, with Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove, we're talking about his work in the parapsychology world. His book is called The PK Man, A True Story of Mind Over Matter. Websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And, of course, you can go to YouTube to see his new Thinking Aloud television series, which how many programs have you done now?
Well, I think we've uploaded about 90 programs so far.
That's a lot, Jeffrey.
Yeah, that's all in basically the last 6-7 months.
You sound like you have fun doing it.
I love it. I totally love it. And you know what? I think knowing you, you love your work too.
Absolutely. I sure do. We do it for free, but let's not tell anybody. What is
I am doing it for free right now.
What is macro psychokinesis?
That would be large-scale psychokinesis as opposed to micro PK, which PK is how we abbreviate psychokinesis. And micro PK, for example, focuses on influencing subatomic particles. And there's a great deal of research in that area. But macro PK would be anything larger than that. It could be bending a spoon. It could be influencing dice in Las Vegas. There are people who do that. And or it could be, as Ted Owens did, affecting the weather and other very large-scale phenomena.
What was Ted's mission, Jeffrey? What did he really want to accomplish?
Well, he hoped that he could influence the U.S. government to launch a whole research program around his abilities, set him up in a base somewhere, and that he would use his psychokinetic abilities to help advance the cause of peace and freedom and scientific research. He wanted to do just good things for everybody. And it's a shame that he was treated with so much scorn and contempt, because maybe if there had been a positive, supportive social environment for him, things could have worked out much differently.
What did he do for a living?
Well, I suppose that's the sad part of the story, because he devoted his whole life to producing these demonstrations, and he worked occasionally as a psychic healer. He actually got into some trouble with the American Medical Association, and he found wealthy individuals who from time to time would support him, and sometimes even not wealthy individuals, working class people who believed in him and would contribute to his well-being. But, you know, frankly, he lived on the edge of society in a way. He never really accumulated much wealth at all.
He didn't want wealth, did he?
Well, I think he would have enjoyed a more comfortable life than he had. Most people would. You know, he was hoping the U.S. government would support him in a comfortable way, and he never got that.
And, of course, did the people put him through the test? Let's talk about that when we come back. Fast hour already. Well, this hour we'll take calls. Okay? We'll be back.